Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Terry Hines.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Terry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
I'm
it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders. And that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women. And Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
You're listening to The Hair Radio Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Today we have a very special guest. Now, he is the man behind Encore HD Magazine, Mr. Larry Stevens. Welcome to Hair Radio.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Kerry. I appreciate you calling me.
Absolutely. Now, you have such an exciting magazine, and we want to let the fans of The Hair Radio Show know all about it. Many of them are already customers of yours. But first,
yes,
why don't you tell us a little bit more about the magazine? Tell us about the magazine.
Well, Encore HD Hair Magazine, we're dedicated to supporting your business, salon, beauty supply, barbershop, you know, you name it. If it has to do with the beauty industry, we want you to be a part. Okay, we're dedicated to supporting your business. We distribute professionally nationwide in all of the major bookstores. We're actually in over 44 retail chains across the country, including Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Hastings bookstores, and basically newsstands around the country which carries our publication. And we started back in 2008. And we were a quaint little 44-pager starting out, and I sold the magazines out of the trunk of my car.
Wow.
Anybody who literally wanted to buy the magazine, I don't care who you were, I'd sell it to you. $5, give it to me. And now we've grown into a national publication with over 104 pages in our publication, which caught the eye of an international magazine distributor called Curtis Distribution. Now, Curtis Distribution distributes magazines like Essence, Ebony, big name magazines. So they caught the eye of them, and now they've carried us throughout the country and even into Canada right now. So we're really happy about being on the national scene and even the international scene as well. We're looking at going into Walmart next, Kroger food stores next, and we're really excited about this. So it's becoming a national brand, and that's really what we wanted throughout the history of our publication.
Well, it sounds like you are well on your way. Now, Larry,
yeah.
Looking in the magazine, which is just a beautiful and exquisite magazine,
Thank you.
I must add, absolutely. Can you tell our listeners, like the stylists who appear in the magazine, how they benefit from appearing in your publication?
Well, that's an easy thing. Throughout the country, like I said, you can pick them. Is not just a consumer magazine; it's also an industry magazine. So anyone can pick the magazine up from the bookstores. However, the beautiful thing about having a national publication is, let's say a stylist wanted to be published in the magazine, and they live in California. Well, they're getting ready to move to Atlanta, and they, you know, pick up the magazine, you know, in Atlanta, and again, it's distributed throughout the country. Whether it be them or whether it be their client who's moving from state to state, city to city, their work is published throughout the country. So not only their customers or their clients can see the magazine and see their work, but you just never know who will see your work in the publication. I've had testimonials of hair salons or barbers or stylists. They would call me and tell me that someone saw their work in the magazine, and it actually got them work, whether it be a wedding or whether it be so it's actually advertising. So it's advertising your work in a on a national scene, whereas you know, you put your work in a local magazine. You got nothing wrong with a local magazine. I was a local magazine at one time. However, we're putting you on a national scene, okay, where people from all walks of life can see your work in the magazine, so that, I mean, you can be seen. I mean, that's what
Absolutely.
It's all about.
Well, I love the fact also, and you were just speaking to this, to those who are hair enthusiasts and just the general public.
Sure.
You know, they're always looking for different hairstyles that they themselves can, you know, perhaps take to the hairstylist or consult with their hairstylist and see if they can, you know, find a different hairstyle, if you will. Your magazine is the perfect item to have in their hands to do so. So this is something that is so beneficial to everyone, as you were just
Absolutely.
Pointing out, which is a unique position to be in, that you're able to communicate so well with the professional hair folks as well as the general public. So,
Correct.
And especially fans of the Hair Radio Show. So in case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Show. I'm Carrie Hines. And today we have on the line with us Mr. Larry Stevens. Now, he is the man behind Encore HD Magazine. And, Larry, we want to welcome you again to the Hair Radio Show.
Thank you so much, Gary.
My pleasure. Now, tell us how we can get this magazine.
Well, you know, as I said, the magazine is distributed throughout the country in all the major bookstores, Barnes & Noble, has it, Books A Million bookstore has it, Hastings bookstores, and newsstands around the country. You'll see it in regionally in places like 7-Eleven, Citgo food stores, that type of thing. But if you don't see it there, you can actually go on to our website, which is www.EncoreHDHairMagazine.com. And you can order it there, and we'll ship it out to you, and you should get it within 3 to 5 business days.
Wonderful. Now, we know that you tour throughout the country.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We want you to kind of keep us in the loop on some of the cities that will be coming up in the next few months or so we can
fantastic.
Keep our listeners and our professional industry folk aware of that.
Absolutely.
Okay,
we also, if I could just kind of squeeze this in, Carrie,
please.
We are you know, on Facebook at Encore HD Hair Mag, and also on Twitter, Encore HD Mag. And Instagram, Encore HD Hair Mag. And I'm a, more or less, if I can say this, a social network junkie. And so, I mean, social network is actually on the forefront of getting, you know, a lot of folks seen these days. And we take advantage of these social networks to get the message out in reference to where we're going to be throughout our social, photo shoot tour, and right now we are currently on a photo shoot tour, touring throughout the country, and you can see that photo shoot tour schedule on our website at www.EncoreHDHairMagazine.com.
Well, I am such a big fan of yours, Larry, and your magazine.
You.
I am. We've been trying to get you on the Hair Radio Show for a while, so I'm so glad that you were able to squeeze us in. We know that you're very busy with your schedule and all of those appearances. One of the reasons that I wanted to get you to be part of our family here at Hair Radio is because of what you're doing. It is so important, and it serves such a great purpose to be able to promote someone's work. So we take that very seriously here at Hair Radio. So
absolutely.
Again, we, you know, I want to say thank you for being able to provide such a great vehicle.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, I'm very passionate about this. I was a hairstylist. I'm no longer behind the chair right now, but I was a hairstylist as well, and also I went to school for be a professional photographer. So a lot of the photographs in the magazine are mine as well. So it's a chance for me to get my work seen as well. So I count it a privilege to have people who trust the magazine and knowing that their work is going to be published. And by the way, a lot of magazines don't guarantee that you're going to be published in their publication. So we take pride in that, in letting you know that for a fact that your work is going to be published in the magazine. It's not one of those things where we, you know, pick and choose who's going to be published or whatever. If you want to be published, then you come on board with our photo shoot tour. And we also, by the way, this is another little plug. We're having also, along with the photo shoot tour throughout the country, we're also having a celebrity lookalike contest. Okay,
tell us about that.
Oh, my goodness. It's a fantastic opportunity not only to showcase your work, but we're having this contest to see who, I mean, you know, everybody says they look like somebody.
Right.
You know,
true.
Well, I look like Denzel, or I look like Tyler Perry, or
right.
whoever.
And
especially all the girls. All the girls think they look like Beyonce. Hey,
Beyonce.
All well and good. Bring your look to the photo shoot tour, and we will definitely get your work and your style.
Into
makeup, you know, anything that you need to the forefront.
Wonderful. Now, Larry, before I let you go, I you were just talking about social media and that you guys are really very serious about that, and I believe that because I see your postings. And the one that kind of, yes, I do. And I saw, and I said, you know, this is fantastic that you guys also do printing. Which is a big need for folks in the hair business. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to that and let our folks know what you do.
Oh, fantastic. I've been in the printing business for about 20 years now in terms of providing, you know, anything print media. You're talking business cards, flyers, posters, brochures, magnetic signs, banners. You name it, we do it. Okay, if it gets printed, we can take care of that for you. And you can actually any printing that you need done, of course, you can contact me directly at 404-981-8277. That's my Atlanta number, and 254-535-6663 is my Texas number. As you know, I think I told you before when we talked earlier. I'm originally from Florida, but I'm retired military, and I moved out to Texas. Been out there for 25 years and developed a really, really good following, and people trust our work. People trust, you know, the print work, the magazine, and I'm really proud of this, man, because your word is your bond, you know, and you want to keep that in the forefront of your business. You don't have, you know, a good word or good name, and I believe your business is doomed to fail.
I agree 100%.
Really, really proud of that.
Well, listen, right here, it's so great because your magazine is a perfect partner to Hair Radio. We reach around the country. We're literally around the world. So this is a great opportunity for our fans to be able to know a little bit more about Encore HD Magazine. So, Larry, I want to say thank you for being with us on the Hair Radio Show.
It is my pleasure. It is my pleasure. Thank you so much for thinking about us. And as you said, we've been trying to get together for the longest, but your schedule, my schedule, it's been an absolute, it's been exciting, but I've been wanting to get with you. And you've been really, really consistent and persistent in trying to get us on, and I appreciate that really, really, really so much.
Well, it's my pleasure. We want to remind the folks out there that your website is www.EncoreHDHairMagazine.com.
That's correct.
So certainly check out Larry Stevens and what his work is all about. Folks, keep it right here. There's more of the Hair Radio Show to come. Thank you so much, Larry.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Vincent Ellis White. Now, he is an author of a book called Finding Chris, My Father. I'd like to welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Vincent. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
Yes. And, well, first of all, and that's Vincent Ellis White. I want to make sure that's clear. Now, you are the author of this book, and I think it has such a very interesting subject matter that it deals with. Tell us about Finding Chris, My Father. What is it all about?
Okay, well, the book Finding Chris, My Father is a memoir that I wrote and published myself, and it's about my very intriguing story growing up dealing with fatherlessness. And to give you a quick synopsis of it, I grew up with a father that was a habitual offender, so he was in and out of jail, and there was, he was definitely in more times than he was out, so I was raised, you know, like a lot of our other young African-American males, I was raised with just my mother in a single-parent, single-income home. And she used to take me to visit him 2 to 3 times a week at the prison, but she told me he was in school. And so I was a young kid. So, you know, when you're a young kid, you listen to your parents, and everything they say is golden. So, you know, I believed whatever she was telling me. She could have told me he was a unicorn. I probably would have believed it. But I thought he was in school. And, you know, my friends that read the book, they said, how would you not know he's in jail? And I said, well, you know, they're thinking I'm seeing jail bars, but I never saw any jail bars. I sat at a picnic table with him, and I'd be able to interact with him. I could touch him, give him a hug, you know, play basketball with him, met his friends and, you know, stuff like that. So in my mind, you know, he was in school, and that's what it was for a while. It wasn't until my, you know, adolescence, until I got a little bit older, that I realized you can't be in school for 18 years, you know, straight. You got to come out and be a doctor or something by then. So I knew something was going on at that point.
How did you feel when you realized that he was incarcerated? How did you feel at that point when you found out he was incarcerated?
And that's a good question, because I started to, I stated before, everything my mom said was golden, man, because I never know her to, like, you know, fabricate anything to me. But that showed me that, you know, she does shield things from me, her son, and, you know, it also showed me that my dad, you know, was doing the same thing. And I started acting out. You know, I was smelling myself a little bit in my preteens and teen years. So, you know, just like how other teens do, I started acting up, you know, and not just acting up, but I had a lot of anger inside of me because of different things. I saw my mother struggling with one income. I saw him popping in and out of her life. You know, I had that lie that was told to me and all kind of other things that was happening that I just needed a disciplinarian in the home. And even though my mother was very, you know, strict and stern about certain things, there's nothing like that male figure being in the home. You know what I mean? And but the shocker was when I turned 16 years old, my mother sat me down and she said, Vince, she was like, your father, you know, that you, I know you know and love and all the other stuff. She said, I want to let you know it's something that's been on my heart for a long time and I've been feeling guilty about it. And she said, your father that you know is your father is not your biological father. And we got into this big, huge argument because I blew up on her. And I always had this big respect for my mother, man. But I never got any arguments with her or anything. That's how I was raised. But I blew up on her because I was like, you know, first of all, this was a second lie. But then this was a huge lie because even though I had mad animosity for this man for different reasons, I loved him to death. I loved when he came around, when he was home. You know, I loved visiting him and just all kind of things. So it just kind of turned my, put a whirlwind inside of my life, really. And I felt like I couldn't really trust anybody. I was asking her questions. She wasn't really answering them. She was more concerned with, you know, how was I dealing with that news. But, you know, I actually, after I got that news, I just started doing some different stuff, man. Like, I actually went and disowned his side of the family. And I was very close with them. Like, I spent time with them, equal amount of time with them as I did with my mom's side. Because even though he wasn't there, his family was there for me my entire life. But I disowned everybody. And my rationale was that they're not my blood. And I thought, like, I was the butt of a big joke. And, like, everybody, you know, knew the secret about me. I didn't find out until later that nobody knew. But I disowned the family, and I only was, like, really rocking with my mom's side of the family, which I said, I know they're my blood because I know I came from her mom, you know, so the last name White, I was only rocking with that side of the family. And my family was mad at me. I mean, it was all kind of stuff going on, man. And I ended up...
So where... Sure. Just to follow your story, where does what happened to your actual father then? Did your mother tell you at that time?
Well, that's what I was getting to. So I graduated from high school, went to college, and when I turned 21, I called my family and I said I was changing my last name, and that's where I got more news at. I told my mom I was changing my middle and last name. My choir name was Vincent Lopez Mapp III. And I changed my name to Vincent Ellis White. And my rationale at the time of being 21 years old was that I knew the last name Ellis because my grandfather had that last name that I grew up with partially. And I knew the last name White was my blood. And I didn't look at the other side of my blood. So that lets you know I was going through an identity crisis. At that point is when my mom started giving me more information on it. I guess she thought I couldn't handle it until then. But she said, well, listen, you know, I already told you your family didn't know anything about the secret, but you've been so angry at your stepfather and then now your biological father. And she was like, I never told him about you. And I said, wait, what? And she was like, I never told Chris Anderson about you. Because at 16, all she told me was that my dad's name was Chris Anderson. That was it. She didn't give me any more information or anything. So then she told me she never told my biological father about me. So I had to transfer all that anger that I had for him thinking he was a deadbeat dad, like, elsewhere. So I was just acting out. But then I started looking for him as well.
And well, so, was your mother, like, a teenager at this time, like, when you were born?
No,
this sounds like something maybe a teenager would do. You said 35.
No, 25. But listen,
oh, 25,
okay. It's funny you say that because... You think that, but I work for the state now for the Division of Child Support Enforcement.
Uh-huh.
And you would be surprised how many mothers have done this same thing. Trust me, it's not a teenage thing. It's not an immature thing because I deal with mothers that are in their 30s that do it. It's a family secret. It's an embarrassment, you know, type thing. So. What happened in talking to my mother as I got older was my mom said, Vince, my biggest mistake was not telling your, like, me and your father parted ways, and I found out I was pregnant. And she said, and I should have told him, but I didn't. And then I met the guy that you thought was your father, and he was telling me, you know, don't worry about it. I'll take care of Vince like he's my own. He ended up signing my birth certificate, so he gave me his entire name. But nobody told me,
wow.
You know what I mean?
What a dynamic person, Anna. Yeah.
Right. So later on, my mother tried to tell me, but at that point, I found out that the person I thought was my dad started putting his hands on my mother. So he threatened her like,
you know,
tell him my secret. So like I said, it's not just a thing of no immaturity, but it's like it was guilt. It was, you know, being physically abused.
Wow.
It was all kind of stuff. And
well, Vincent, this is a little bit of a different story too, because okay, so the gentleman that you believe was your father, who was supportive as he wanted to sign that birth certificate and actually be your father, unlike a lot of folks today. And then he didn't want you to even know that you knew that he wasn't your father. That really doesn't happen all that much. I mean, really, I know it. I mean, I haven't heard of it too often. We see the opposite play out every day on Mari Povich show. So this is something that seems a little different.
Well, like I say, a lot of people are going to be very subjective with their opinions on this. Like, and I see both, especially me working with Child Support now, but I can see the good intentions in the beginning. I definitely see that. On the flip side, I don't recall him being such a great father, just to be honest. Because he wasn't there, I mean, for a lot of stuff, like even, you know, just giving me positive reinforcement and a positive role model, and that, those are attributes that a good, you know, father should possess as well. It was great that he stepped up, but when you step up, you got to step all the way up. You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree.
You can't get somebody your name and not tell them that you're not their father, but then you don't do anything, and later on, it's not only going to be a mighty blow when they find out that you're not their father, but it's already been a big blow because you haven't even been there. So what I tell people actually is, I say, hey, not only was I dealt a mighty blow to find he was my father, but on the low, I was kind of relieved because he hadn't been there, and I was kind of embarrassed the fact that all my friends knew I had a father in jail. You know what I mean? So I was looking forward to finding Chris, but then at the same time I got disappointed because I thought Chris was trying to not be in my life either. Found out that he didn't know, and the beauty of
and
it
all that you had to go on was, you know, whatever your mother was kind of doling out to you in bits and pieces.
Right. And the same thing, she didn't know any of his siblings. She didn't know any of his siblings or anything like that. And his name was so common. I like to share this one funny story. His name was so common that she had been looking for him to find him for me because she saw the hurt that I was dealing with and having him there. And she said that one time social services contacted her back and said, we think we found him. And so she rushed down into the social service office, like, you know, hoping to find my dad. And she said, they bring out a white man.
Chances are it's probably
like,
not your daddy.
But the funny thing is, they were trying to convince her, well, this fits your description. No, that's, you're missing something critical there. He's not black, he's not white. So that was the funny part. I changed my name and all kind of stuff with it, but I don't want to give the whole story to the listener. They definitely got to get Finding Chris, My Father, the book. But I will tell you all, I ended up finding my father in the way that I met him and found
him. We're going to hold that for just a bit because I want to turn to your motivation for writing this book. And then we'll get into, I know, you know, that you do a lot of social type work now, but let's get into, so what was the motivation? When did you say, well, you know what? I've got to write a book about this. What was that motivation?
Okay, so
we know that you went through the story, but what was the motivation for writing this book?
You know, that's a great question because when I met my dad, I didn't write the book right away. I had no thoughts on writing a book. Didn't know anything about writing a book, and all of a sudden, I was just sitting there, and I was thinking about the crazy turn of events that happened when I was, meeting my dad and going through the whole thing. And so I'm like, I gotta sit down and try to jot this. And so I sit down and I'm like, all right, let me sit back and try to, you know, write this down. And so I'm like, I'm gonna first think about writing a book. So I just start writing it like old school, like how you write a paper in class. And I'm like writing the outline. I'm going off the top of the head. And everything like that, and I start putting this book together. I'm telling my dad about it, and he's like, "You don't know about writing." I'm like, "But I got to write this book because I feel like it's going to help me be fair. It's going to be therapeutic for me, and maybe somebody else." But that's it. That's the only thought I had. Maybe somebody else. It was more so trying to help me work through some things I was dealing with. And I wrote the book, and after that, I didn't even really push it like that, but it started getting in the hands of a lot of people, and people were like, I want you to come tell your story. Not only was I not a writer, but I wasn't a motivational speaker. Like, I was very outgoing, but I didn't do the motivational speaking thing. So I was, like, turning stuff down, but they were like, come on, come speak, and I would just share the story. But when I share a story like this, and it's my own story, I'm so passionate, you know, with this thing that, like, I started captivating audiences, and people were standing up testifying, guys and girls, you know, older and younger were testifying. The audience was growing, and people were, like, crying, and I mean, it was crazy, and it was one particular time is when I realized it was no longer about me, and probably never was about me. You know, it's probably just, you know, well, not probably, for sure, was God using me as a vessel. But I was in Newport News, Virginia, speaking, and this guy stood up with a hardened face, and he was like, you know, I just got out of jail not too long ago, and I don't never stand up and speak in front of people, and I never cried in front of anybody. But he was like, you know, you got me, like, in tears over here. And he was like, I don't know my father. And the reason I've been going out of jail and dealing with gangs and violence and anger and all this other stuff is because I don't know my dad. You know, I needed a dad there. And then we talked. The whole audience was crying. All people stood up and shared their testimony. And that day I said, okay. I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I said, okay, this is no longer about me. I said, this is about me helping other people. And I was so glad that I wrote the book at that point. So that became my motivation. Even though the book was already written, my motivation was now to uplift people that are dealing with fatherlessness. And it just so happened that same day, I met these two guys that said that they do stage plays. And I turned them down three times. I was like, I don't know anything about stage plays. But they kept pushing and pushing and pushing. They bought my book. We started working on a cast and script, I mean a script and doing casting. And I'm looking like, where is God trying to take me here? Because all I wanted to do was write a book for myself. And next thing you know, it's like I'm going all over the place traveling. I got a pending stage play. I knew I didn't have any money for a stage play, but we were like, we're going to put it on somehow. We put it on in Tidewater area of Virginia, and we had a small response. I wanted to bring it back home to where I'm from, which is Richmond, Virginia. And I brought it back home, and no money to advertise or anything. And next thing you know, man, this thing just took a life of its own. Like, we sold our shows. People started donating to it. Like, nonprofit organizations started donating to it. Public figures, I mean, private donors. And we had money to make it travel. We got it on the news. NBC called me. CBS, ABC. I did two on ABC. And so I just started getting, like, exposure, and just started blowing up. And then more blessings were coming because people were coming up to me after my show saying, I'm dealing with that right now. Like, young adults, it was older adults. To answer your question about my mom earlier, here's another example. I had some ladies that had to be in their 40s, late 40s, maybe early 50s, that came to me and said, listen, I have a son or daughter right now, and I have not told them about their father, somebody different than who they know. And, I mean, they were way older than my mom. You see what I'm saying? And I said, you haven't told them? Why not? And they're telling me their reason why not. And so I immediately go in because it just hits my heart. I'm like, listen, you got to tell them. I don't care how old he is, 13, 18, 20. We go back and forth about it because they tell me their reason for not telling him. And I said, man, end of the day, it's selfish. Like, you got to let them know. And I exchanged numbers with them, and they contacted me back. And, like, they contacted me back and said, since talking to you and seeing your play and reading your book, I went ahead and told my son. And, you know, and they keep up with me. And, you know, some of them have said, you know, now my son is so glad I told him. He was mad at first, but now he's met his dad. And, you know, another lady told me he met his family. I mean, it's just been so many breakthroughs and blessings from me sharing my story. To even going further, I mean, that's just a few testimonies, but they happen in the droves every time I have a stage play or I do a motivational speaking, to the point that I just knew it was no longer about me at that point. It was more so about the masses and the people. And, you know, all the things that's happening nowadays in society, just the elevated incarceration and the violence and everything, you usually can stem that back to a big factor being no father in the home. Right? I mean, they always, if you do the research and get the statistics, there's always no father in the home. So we can actually, I'm glad like Obama has that, you know, my brother's keeper and things going on, the Fatherhood Initiative, because that's where it starts. If we can fix that area, and the whole, a lot of this stuff would just get filtered out, and it goes towards a more positive direction. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I know exactly what you mean. I like when I've read that you referred to it as the father factor. So that's what it sounds like you were just explaining, but feel free to tell everybody exactly what the father factor is a little bit more.
Yeah, I call it the father factor, it's actually referred to as the father wound. But it is the father factor because it's usually the common denominator of a lot of these negative traits that people are possessing, negative symptoms, these reactions people are having. If you were to take any of them, one out of every three young adults has grown up without a father, especially in African-American communities, one out of every three. So we want to narrow it down to that. And there's no disciplinarian in the home. There's nobody for a male or female to learn from, a male to model himself after, and a female is supposed to give her heart up to her father first. If there's no father there, she has no male role model there, and therefore, if you look up the symptoms of a young female not having a father in the home, it's usually like promiscuity, maybe not trusting men, or on the flip side, like giving almost every man your heart because you're looking for your father. If there's things like that, not having a high value, high self-esteem because of that. And for males, if there's no father in the home, they may go towards gangs, they may go towards violence, they harbor a lot of anger like I did. They harbor a lot of anger, and they take it out in other ways. They may, have domestic violence on their girlfriends. So there's so many symptoms that all resort back to the father's factor and the father wound. And so I say wound because a lot of people think that it's just young people. But that's so incorrect. It's millions of adults that are out here, 30, 40, 50, 60, just walking around with a father wound. And their wound is that I never had my father at home. Whatever the case may be, some of them are still looking. I still want him there. I want to know why he left. Why did he put his hands on my mom? Why did he do this? Why did he do that? And they still need that answer. Now, if you ask them, they're not going to tell you that because they don't know how to express that. A lot of them say, I don't need him. I just need my mom. But yes, you do. You need him. And if you don't need him, you need some questions answered. Even those questions answered may help you. And
So it sounds like you're talking about closure. For these the children of these fatherless homes, if you will.
And these children turn into adults with no closure.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, this is just interesting, I have to tell you. Wow. All right. Well, hold on. If folks out there, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, I have with us today, he's the author of Finding Chris, My Father. And it's a book out that speaks to the lack of a father in being in the homes, and I'm sure how it influences the children or the whole family, all of the dynamics, I'm sure. So this has been turned into a play. You started the trek to look for your own father, Chris, of course, which is the title, Finding Chris, My Father. We haven't gotten to the part yet about you finding him, so we're going to get to that in just a moment. But what led you to, or how did this lead you to the work that you do currently with the social work?
It feels like it was indirectly because I like to joke with people, tell them that I have so many different degrees and none of them go together and none of them are in the work that I do now. So I just feel like it's a divine intervention that I end up in this field because I have an undergrad degree in mass communication. I have a master's degree in education and I have an executive graduate certificate in business management. So none of the three are the same. And, when you grow up, they teach you to kind of get your degrees in the same thing.
Right.
Now, fortunately, I was able to make them all work out now with what I do. But at first, I didn't have any degree in this field. And I was just working odd jobs here and there. And all of a sudden, I started mentoring part-time. And when I started mentoring part-time, the mentoring was just so fulfilling working with these young adults. And as you mentor, you build rapport with them. I started noticing that none of the kids that I mentored had any fathers yet.
Not only that, they were coming from group homes, foster homes. You know, some of them had may have had a mental health issue or something like that. So I started, and it started just, you know, of course, touching my heart because it's what I went through. And, you know, I took a full-time job as a life skills coach working with young adults. And all of these guys I worked with were great young adults, I mean, full of potential, but they had so much baggage. And it was that father factor. I can't tell you one of them had a father, to be honest with you. I mean, I remember them all. Or if they had a father, the father was putting their hands on them, or you just being a horrible example of a father, and they were mimicking that. So I just started to really develop a passion for working with these young adults. And I said, man, it's crazy I don't have a degree in this, but I really want to pursue this. So I just started, I said, look, I just took it to God. I'm like, if you can get me, you know, whatever job I was applying to, I know the degree is asking for this, but I have this heart and this passion. If you can get me in an interview, I'll kill it. And I go in an interview, and they're like, you don't have a degree in this, but I have the experience. And I would get an interview, get the job, and I started working. I worked at the Richmond Department of Social Services. I worked as a life skills coach. I've worked as a counselor. I worked in benefits. I mean, I've just worked with youth and families for a long time. Even to the point now, I've worked at the Mayor's Youth Academy. The Mayor of Richmond has a youth academy for young adults to help them get on the right track. I was a counselor there. I worked at prison. I worked at as a CO. I worked as a counselor, a youth counselor in a prison. I mean, I've worked with so many different young adults and adults that all, as I talk to them and as I have counseling groups and sessions, guess what? The father factor is a common denominator every time. And I don't even mean for it to happen like that, but it's just a real fact in life. And so now I work for the Division of Child Support Enforcement, and, of course, I hope you can guess, the father not being there and is just a huge thing with the Division of Child Support Enforcement as well. And I want to be clear, it's not always the father, because we have plenty of non-custodial parents that are mothers, that are uncles, and, you know, aunts and everything. But just to keep it all the way real with you, though, it's the highest percentage is fathers not being there. And so I have a passion for it, so it falls in line with everything that I do. My degrees actually work now because Mass Comm is just all about basically, you know, speaking and communication. I do that all the time now with my work I do with my books and plays. You know, business, I have my own LLC that I do educational workshops. I sell books. I do my plays. So the business management piece is there. And then the Masters in Education, I educate people all the time. I work in, you know, schools and things like that when I speak. So now I've been able to tie all my degrees in together, which is a beautiful thing, because that's something I was asking God for a long time. Now we're able to tie them together. So, you know, it's been great.
Well, I'll tell you, I like when I read VEW Enterprises, VIEW Enterprises, I would imagine. I love it. I thought it was such a great name.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yes, as an entrepreneur. Now, just to go back just a little bit, because I like this information that you've just explained about really the whole subject. But what I didn't ask you is that why do you think we have so much of this prevalent in our community where we don't have the fathers present in the homes? What do you think? I'm just curious,
you know,
on your take on this.
Yeah, I was going to say it. Yeah, I was gonna say, and it will be just that. It'll be just a thing, because I do not proclaim to have the answer, and I like to just have open discussion and awareness, because I don't have the answer. And I actually had somebody tell me on another interview I did recently. They were saying that it goes back to slavery, and I said, man, you know, I didn't even think about it that far back. You know, I'm only thinking about what I see, and, you know, going back to what I've encountered and stuff like that. But they broke it down to me, saying that, you know, go back to slavery, and, you know, and the men being stripped away from the families and, you know, losing their sense of pride, things like that. And that was an interesting perspective. So in answering your question, it'll only be just a perspective of what I think. But my answer to that is just that I believe that a lot of our men nowadays have not been taught and have forgotten what it's like to be kings and to fulfill our purpose that God designed for us. And I say that to say, you know, God didn't design for these broken families. You know, God designed for man and woman to be in the family and for the man to be the provider, the protector, and, you know, just the king in the home. You know what I mean? And I don't mean king in any type of like, I rule everything, you know, you have no say type thing. But you know what I mean, just a king. Like, you taking care of the home, you making sure everybody's straight, the kids straight, you praying over the family, things like that. And so when men started to stray from that role that is designed for them, now everything breaks apart. Keep in mind, it's just my opinion, but I believe that everything breaks apart. So now you got these amazing women that have to step up outside of their role and have to play both sides. The woman now has to play father and definitely be the mother. So they're designed to be nurturing and do all those great things, but they're not designed to be the top provider like a man is supposed to be. They're not designed to be the protector like a man is supposed to be. Now, they do a great job at it, and they raise kings, you know, even like me. I was raised by a woman that did it. But the thing about it is like, imagine if it stayed like the way God designed it. Imagine if that happened. I just don't think we have a lot of these incarcerated brothers. I don't think we have these guys on unemployment and these, you know, guys in the project and these guys committing different types of crimes. If we had men that were stepping up and being who God designed them to be. And so that's where I am with it. I just want to, I want to raise kings. I want to let these men know that, hey, listen, before you think you ain't nothing, and before you think this all I'm ever going to be is, you know, whatever you're doing, this crimes or whatever, you actually are designed to be much more. But nobody told you. You know what I mean? Nobody set an example for you to know that you're supposed to be that. And the only way I knew it is that my mom told me, and then my faith in God and matured. But I didn't have nobody to take my eyes upon and see that. You know what I mean? I had my grandfather that was there. He was a great example. I think he helped too, but he died when I was younger. But I didn't have a father that was supposed to be there to say, hey, son, don't do that. That's leading you down the wrong path. Hey, do this, do that. Look at me. And, you know, so I don't think it's just fatherhood either. It's on a little different subject. I think it also is about relationships too. A lot of men can't really perform in the proper way in the relationship, and that's why we cheat and we do this and that. Because imagine if we had that father in the home that not only did those things I spoke about earlier as far as protecting, but imagine if you're a young man and you see your daddy treating your mom like a queen, like he holding doors, he, you know, getting her what she needs, he takes care of her when she's hurting, he talks to her, he communicates with her. He only has one wife, one woman. When you grow up, you're going to want to mimic that. But on the flip side, in reality, we got a lot of guys out there not being home. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? They got different women that they're bringing in and out of their life. Sometimes even they tell their son, hey, don't say nothing. You know what I mean? So just keeping it real. So imagine you got that. That's what you see. Then you're going to exemplify that negative characteristic later on. And then you out here being a player just like Papa was. You know what I'm saying? So it all stems back to that father factor. But it's not just about fatherhood. It's about what example are we setting. And it's based on what our parents said. You see what I'm saying?
So yes, completely. Like wow. Well, Vincent, I have to ask you. Now, if someone, let's take a look. If someone is going through the same situation that you've been through, and as you mentioned earlier, we did talk a little bit about this, but what advice would you give to someone now who is finding out that someone who they thought was their father now is not their father? Speak to that a little bit, if you would. Just what advice would you tell that person? What would the Vincent now say to the Vincent then?
That actually happened to me. So I'll give you a real example. That happened. I went to my alma mater, Norfolk State, in April, and I spoke on the panel. And I spoke about my story, so I didn't touch my father. And this kid came up to me. He waited in line for a long time. And he had a screw face on when he came up to me. And he started talking to me. He was like, man, your story is so real. Like, you actually have lived what I'm currently going through. And I had to elaborate. He said, I don't know my father. You know, and I just found out who he is. I found him on Facebook. And he said, I reached out to him, but he doesn't want to talk to me. And his face just got tighter and tighter as he was talking to me. And I said, well, first of all, I said, you got to release that anger that you got going on right now. He's like, I'm not angry. I said, nah, it's on your face. I see it. And so I said, you got to release this anger. He's like, well, he should have did this and this. I said, look, you know I know. You know I know. Because I was you at 16. I was very angry. And you couldn't even mention father to me because I snapped. And so he kind of loosened up, and we talked, and he was like, I don't think I need to meet him. I said, I only reached out. I said, but see, this is the thing. You reached out because you do need to meet him. It's something inside of you that yearns to hear from him. I told him, I said, you know what, your outcome may not be as great as mine was, just realistically speaking. I said, he could be a bum, or he could just be dead. He could be, you know, a regular guy. You just never know. But the thing is, you still need to hear from him and have that time to dialogue with him because of that closure piece that you mentioned earlier. Even if you meet him and he says, straight up, I don't want nothing to do with you, it's going to hurt, but you at least got an answer from him. Or you might meet him and he said, oh, my God, I never knew about you. You see what I'm saying? So when I told him all of that, he was nodding and listening, and it was breaking walls down as I was telling him. And he said, I never thought about it like that. I said, right. And when I was 16, nobody broke it down to me like that. But I now know, as an older gentleman now, I know that there's always another side to the story. It don't mean the side is great, but I'm just saying you need to hear from him. I said, listen, reach out to him. Remove that animosity. Find a way, whether it be, you know, pray to whoever you believe in or just go to a quiet place. But remove the animosity so you can't come to him with that, because then he's going to turn away. And I was like, you got to also remember, too, he might be feeling guilty as well. Don't think he's just staying away because he's staying away. He might say, I messed up in the first 5 years, but now it's already been 5 years on. I might as well stay away another five because I feel so guilty. I wasn't there for the first five. I just said, see, you got to ask him why. You know what I mean? You got to hear the answer from him. And, you know, he was against it at first, but as I kept talking, me and him exchanged number two. This is real story. And he kept texting me periodically to give me updates. But you know his most recent text? This is no lie. Hand to God. He said, Vincent, I just want to keep in touch with you like I told you I would. He said, I'm going to meet my dad at this next week or something like that, next week. He said, I'm kind of nervous, but I'm excited too because we talked on Facebook. I let him talk. I didn't come at him like in a negative way. And now I'm about to meet him for the first time. And he said, I would never even go to meet him had I not met you. And so my advice to young people that are dealing with this is that, you know, you got to face your fears. You got to at least try to have an adult conversation with this person, even if you're mad at them or whatnot. You got to have open communication with them. I think it's going to help as far as the closure. It's going to help with their anger. And not always anger. Sometimes it's just confusion. It's going to help with those question marks floating around in your head. Who is he? What did he do? Why did he walk away? Why did he stay? And on the real, it might have been something, you know, your mom did. See, it's so many different variables to this that you can't just go on what your mom said. You can't just go on what your thoughts are. You got to get all the different sides. So that's what I was
thinking. Well, I think, sure. Thank you very much. Now, I think this is a great point for us to kind of go back to your story. So you had been searching and searching. You know, you were told that the person you thought was your father all this time was not your father, and he was incarcerated, this person you thought was your father, and you had all kinds of feelings of frustration for different levels and so forth and so on, and you found out your mother had told you what turned out to be something false a time or two regarding the person you thought was your father. How did it all come to be that you actually move closer to discovering Chris?
It was actually by happenstance. And, you know, this is kind of like the climax in the book, really, but it was like happenstance.
Ending of the book. Do not give us the ending of finding Chris, my father, because we want to pick up the book. So we're gonna park it when we get real close to that point, because I want to make sure everybody gets this book, including myself. I think it's a great idea. It's a great subject, and we'll talk more about it. But I'll let you finish because I really like this idea.
Yeah. So and I'll stop right before that. So what happened is, like, you know, I graduated from college and I'm just going on with life. Like, I go get my undergrad degree, I get my master's. And I'm doing what I call masking, which is where, like, I'm able to put on this mask like everything's fine. And, you know, it's partially going great, you know, career and degree and whatnot, but there's this piece that's missing. But I keep in mind, we had no information. So I literally didn't hear anything about, you know, a Chris or anybody at that point, from, you know, graduating undergrad till, you know, in my later 20s. And like I said, I don't want to give away the story, so this is the part I have to stop at. But I ended up, I will just tell you this, I ended up meeting him. But when I tell you the story, it's crazy. Like, it's just so unbelievable. Y'all got to get the book, finally. Chris, my father, I'm telling you.
Now, how do we get the book?
Well, you can get it on Amazon.com. So you just go to Amazon, and you know, you can type it, "Finding Chris, My Father." It's on Kindle and paperback. It's also, I mean, it's on a lot of sites. You know, it's on BarnesandNobles.com, things like that. But Amazon's probably the most popular place that everybody goes to. So it's there. You know, you can definitely follow me on social media, because I update everything on there. It's links to the book, excerpts and play stuff. So, I mean, motivational speaking engagement. So I'm on Facebook. My name is Vincent Ellis White. I'm on Instagram, Vincent Ellis White, and Twitter is Vince Ellis White. So definitely follow me on there. But get the book on Amazon.com, man. Find it, Chris. I guarantee you'll love it. I want to tell you, too, not only is it a travel stage play, and God just keeps expanding my audience, but I recently had a Hollywood producer take a strong interest in it and option my book. And what that means is that they say they want to turn the book into a stage play. So my book has been optioned. Into a film. So my book has been optioned to be turned into a motion picture. So I mean, I'm still taking options though. So I mean, I'm always looking for another option to see what, you know, the best offer is and whatnot. But I was just shocked, because I never in my dreams would I imagine a story that I looked at as a bad thing would turn out to be blessing so many people and creating awareness. But also, it can ultimately become a film which can hit the theaters and bless the masses and things like that. So it's just a beautiful thing, man.
It sounds like a very beautiful thing. And on that note, I have to say, what in closing might you share with the folks out there for whatever they're going through, Mr. Vincent Ellis White? What would you say to folks? Because apparently, and you've been dealing with a lot of families on so many different issues, and usually that's relating to this, the father factor or fatherless factor, if you will. What kind of advice would you give overall, or what's your closing thought on folks who are going through things these days as it relates to the family?
Yeah, no problem. My closing thoughts would just be, man, it's really about having hope and being encouraged and being uplifted. You know, man, life, I ain't gonna let nobody tell you life is easy. Like, life is tough. We go through something that we think is the toughest thing in the world. Then 6 months later, we go through something even tougher. So we got to have hope. We have to be encouraged, be uplifted. The thing that saved me was everything from my faith to having mentors. You know, I was in the Boys and Girls Club. I had some strong, positive, you know, male role models there. But now, even as an older man, when I get down, I can have positivity around me. So I tell everybody, man, no matter what you're going through, find some people, some positivity that you can just surround yourself with, just like a big hug, like, and surround yourself with positivity, people that's going to lift you up. Because, you know, if you're already on the verge of breaking, you don't need to be around on negativity. I stay around people that lift me up. That will give you that hope that you need. You know, hopefully, if you're a person of faith, man, just go to that, let that faith build and understand that, you know, whatever the enemy has meant for bad, God can turn around for good. And that's just really what I float on right there. Like, I always think about it. I was like, oh, my God, this situation is so bad. And that's what I'm thinking about at the time. But then, like, a year or two later, I'm looking back, and it's just that situation turned into something so good. And I'm looking back like, you know, how did that even happen? But if I never had hope, I don't know that I would have got there. So anybody that's listening, no matter if you're going through, your father not being there, your mother putting your hands on you, everybody's on drugs in your family except you, you don't have no money, no car, whatever is going on, understand that that's a valley. It's only for a moment. And that moment could be 20 years. But I'm just saying it's only for a moment. You need to have hope, be encouraged, and understand that you can and will get out of that situation. Have faith and surround yourself with the right people. Connect with the right people, and you know you're gonna have a breakthrough and get out of situation. You're not designed to be in that turmoil forever, and so you know I believe that you'll all get out of it as long as you have faith and have hope.
Wow. Well, on that note, I want to thank Mr. Vincent Ellis White. Vincent, thank you so much for being with us on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Just your message. Getting out there, you are transforming folks' lives today. So thank you so much. And again, the book is Finding Chris, My Father. It's a play. It's going to be out there. You're going to be just, you can get it off Amazon.com and so many other places. And we're just so excited to have you with us. And we want you to come back and let us know, continue to let us know how you progress in reaching folks out there with your message.
Thank you. I appreciate it, you having me on your show, and I appreciate every listener.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that will help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at ChairWatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients. Just like the eyes are the window to the soul, the scalp is the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. The way to obtain it is with Stimulating Roots. Stimulating Roots will exfoliate and detoxify your scalp, promoting healthy hair growth. Stimulating Roots has a system to detoxify and grow your hair. Their shampoo combines menthol, camphor, and pink grapefruit essential oil to improve blood circulation in the scalp. Their conditioner, that stimulates, moisturizes, and hydrates the hair. The regeneration oil, that contains essential oils that work together to promote hair growth while calming an itchy, dry, and irritated scalp. Open the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. Awaken the senses to your scalp with Stimulating Roots. This is available at StimulatingRoots.com. That's StimulatingRoots, R-U-T-Z.com.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now my next guest comes to us from the world of music. It is my honor to welcome the one and only Louis Martinet to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Good morning,
Hello.
Louis.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing just fantastic. Now I've got to tell everybody, you are truly an innovative producer, songwriter. And I call a visionary also. You created the popular girl group Exposé and so much more. We're going to get into all of that. And they were the first to have 4 top 10 hits on the Billboard Hot 100 charts from a debut album, that is. And I just want to say welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Yes, now listen, the style of music or the genre is largely known as freestyle music. So I'm going to kind of jump on in and start there. Would you be kind enough to explain to everybody how you describe the phrase freestyle music?
So the best way I can describe it is when disco kind of hit the wall and everybody was hate disco kind of thing, there was still a need for dance music. So I started, playing around with the new electronic equipment that is just coming out at that time in the early 80s. And, started writing songs that were, different than the disco, but still danceable, a bunch of songs, and then I put a girl group together, like you said, and there was actually a first generation of them, which is called Alejandra, Lori, and Joya. So that was the first generation, and then we had some problems. The girls didn't like to travel, and they wanted to kind of do their own thing too. So they actually, in California, found Jeanette, which is the next generation. So they actually helped me out in finding the next generation. So it wasn't a bad fallout or anything. It was kind of like a mutual thing that, that we were going to moving different directions, and they say, hey, Louis, there's this girl that sounds just like Ali, which sang Born on Return. That's short for Alejandra.
Right.
And her name is Jeanette, so I went, flew to L.A. and met her, and then we signed her, and then I signed another girl named Ann Curlis, and then another one named Joya. Actually, the first generation is, I made a mistake, it's Ali, Alejandra, Lori, and Sandra. That's the first generation. Then the second generation is Jeanette, in this order, Jeanette, Joya, and Ann. And that was, just to be clear, you know, I like to be clear with my, I threw in the wrong name in the first generation.
Well,
but yeah,
Yes, no, I was going to jump on in, and because and that's really important, and I saw that, and I said, because I think one of the individuals, I believe Sandra, I think it is, I think she passed away, and I just wanted to say, yeah, and there was so much that went into all of that, and I saw and read all about your relationship with, you know, working with Clive, you know, from Clive Davis, from Arista and all of that. Back in those times and working with this, you know, these amazing women and just being such a creative force. But I want to go back a little bit, Louis. I want to ask you about the beginning because, you know, you really, you've always, it seems like you always had music inside of you in some capacity or another. Can you tell the folks, now, where are you from and how did you get into music to begin with?
Well, I was originally born in Cuba, then moved when I was very young to California, and I started playing in bands. We actually put bands together where I played percussion, and we used to rehearse actually in my mom's and dad's garage, and we used to practice there all the time and then do little parties and stuff for free. You know, we weren't good enough to charge, so we did the parties for free. but we loved it, you know. We just wanted to perform.
Absolutely.
And then I moved to Miami. Yeah, then I moved to Miami, and then I started actually DJing. Yes. And then I met some people that had a studio, and I was in another band where I was playing drums at this time. It was a rock band, and then this guy Frank, he had a recording studio, a small studio in a warehouse, and since I'm a DJ, he says, "Oh, you record music?" I goes, "Yeah, I record music. I write and record." So he says, "Great, so come over and do some music." So he thinks I'm going to do dance music, and I'm doing rock music. So he was like, "Oh, well, that's not what I was expecting." But then I ended up starting to do the music, and back then, believe it or not, it was called hip hop.
Really?
The Latin freestyle that you know was called hip-hop. And then rap started taking the name over and calling it hip-hop. So then they changed the hip-hop to freestyle now, Latin freestyle. But in the very beginning, in the early 80s, it was called hip-hop.
That
the Latin freestyle was actually called hip-hop. But then it kind of so that was it. Yeah, that was kind of like a unique little thing there that happened.
Absolutely. I was just thinking as you said that, and I remember even some of my research I saw in New York where we had Hot 97 or whatever, and before that was known in the hip-hop world in that way, it was like a kind of devoted to freestyle type music. So maybe there's a lot more to that. Very interesting, I really have to say. So that's how you kind of got your foray into working with the studio and getting into music and all of that. And I saw where you guys, where you had created the, you know, a music label. But what was it that was the beginning little impetus that said, hold it, let's pull together an act. Let's find or create an act. And I know you were working with others, but how did that, was that your idea to kind of pull a group together?
Yeah, I kind of like actually thought of three girls because I always liked the Supremes. And you know, I should do a girl group like the Supremes, three girls, and I'll name them Exposed. At first it was called Exposed. And then the labels didn't like Exposed, so we changed it to Exposé.
Yeah.
So if you
and
if
they
you
both work, let me just officially say that. I'm going to tell those folks. They both work. I love both.
Yeah, both names are... both things are good. But if you remember back in late 83, early 84, mm-hmm. it was exposed for a couple of years.
Okay.
You know, and then when Arista signed the group, then we changed it to Exposé. So there was a single that was on my label that was Point and Return. Those are still out there. I know people that still have them. So
the originals. Now you guys went in and re-recorded those songs, correct? With the next version of the group, is that right?
Yeah, we recorded not the music, just the vocals. The music was the same.
Uh-huh. Wow, I love this. Well, listen, there are lots of questions that I have to ask you as a producer, and I kind of want to go back a little bit. Folks, if you're just joining us, let me just break it on down for you. You're listening to the All-New Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, my very special guest with me today is Louis Martinet. Now, he is a producer. You are a writer, a producer. You're legendary to me in all that you have done with the amazing hits that you've had with Exposé and others. And you've worked with quite a few. And I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about it because, when I think back, I grew up I'm in Brooklyn, New York now, and our show goes all over the world. But when I remember back in the day, and being growing up in northern New Jersey. So let me just make it clear, because I think that was how I was introduced to freestyle music. And I remember, on the radio, and I remember KTU when it came along, and just nonstop music. The freestyle music was just everywhere. You couldn't escape it. But then when I look back, I said, well, you know, I'm kind of, how was R&B, tinges of R&B, was it? Because it seemed to have been kind of like a divided world as we moved along. And R&B was R&B, and everybody had their little tranches. But to me, when I listen to Exposé's music, I'm blown away with the R&B, the soul that goes through the words and the music and just the feel. And I know that's awful to kind of, you shouldn't pigeonhole or try to put things in different categories, because music is music and there are no boundaries. And I just love, I don't know if I look at myself as the targeted demo per se, but I love what you guys, what Exposé represented.
Thank you, thank you.
Great job to you. Yes, absolutely. So now, was that, and you say, and I think that's what it is, you say that you were influenced somewhat by the Supremes in terms of girl groups and all of that. So could that have, I hear a lot of wonderful, wonderful, kind of different feels and different genres in those songs that speak to everybody. So that wasn't necessarily purposely done. You were just doing what was inside of you. How did that, how did it feel to reach so many people across so many different, genres or spectrums? Or, how do you look at that? Or do you have that, do you feel the same way? Or
I tried to let the thing is that I'm influenced by a lot of different genres. I love R&B. I love hip-hop. I love rock. I grew up with rock. I played rock originally before I DJed. I played in rock bands in California, and then when I got here to Miami. And so all those influences, they come out when I'm doing music, really without meaning to. Even the Beatles, and groups like that, I get some influences from without knowing it. I later notice it, but I don't knowingly do it.
Right, exactly. Loving it. Well, now, Louis, I want to ask you about Exposé. And I also, back in the day, I didn't know until I was doing a little deep dive research, but that you had also worked with the Cover Girls. And I had, I always thought there was this huge competition thing. It was either you were in the Exposé group Faith Group or you were in the CoverGirls. It was rarely that you were in both. So how did that come about? And I think I was reading somewhere how you felt about it, but share with everybody. Do you recall any of that and working with the CoverGirls and all of that?
Of course. Yeah, and other girl groups that I work with that I actually created was another group called Sequel. I don't know if you knew that.
Yes.
So we're kind of like all friends, you know, Andy Panda from New York. He put together the CoverGirls, and he said, hey, you want to do a song for them? I go, sure, you know, and vice versa, you know, we work on with each other, you know, we kind of like, you know, and we're all kind of, you know, friends and work together with, you know, like, there was other great producers like Arthur Baker and things like that, that do great music. And we kind of like, you know, we helped each other. We didn't, you know, like
there was no
try to, exactly. We helped each other. Like if they needed to use a studio, they can come to mine and vice versa if I go to New York and all that. So yeah, we worked together, you know, we didn't have any animosities. So it was kind of like, you know, the better they did, the better maybe I would do too, you know,
I have to tell you.
That was good.
It was good. I have to say, I started putting on my little thinking cap here, and I said, I remember interviewing only one other freestyle artist, and, you know, I've interviewed a lot of folks, but I remember, and she was just the most kindest, gracious young lady I had pretty much had ever met, and that was Little Susie back in New Jersey. I remember she kind of came to the radio station and did an interview. I was at an actual station back then, and I just have to say, so your genre, the freestyle genre was represented incredibly well. But then,
yeah, all the artists, yeah, they were all great. They were all very, very nice and helpful. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
like I said, it was great working with a lot of artists that I work with.
Well, I can hear that, Lewis. You have that kind of personality, though I could just tell you could work with anybody. You know, I can hear it. You have such a, you know, just down to earth and easy to relate to. And, you know, and I'm sure that was... you know, what was communicated throughout your music and your endeavors and all of that wonderful good stuff. So now I want to turn to, inspiring folks, and I know you guys had a lot of hit records. How did it feel to have those top 10 hits, you know, and this is on Billboard's top charts, if you will. You know, considered, it wasn't so much crossover, I don't think, but it crossed over, I think, to a lot of different areas. I think we talked about that. But so how did that feel? And also being inspiring so many other folks out there who, you know, are now kind of, dance music is big, or it's huge. So how do you feel about that, and what's your take on all of that?
Well, the Billboard, some of my product crossover into the pop. I actually had, like you mentioned, when we first talked, Seasons Changer was number one on the Pop 100, number one on the R&B also, and other charts. So it kind of like, you know, different genres that had jumped. And then other songs also did the same thing. And you know, that also led me to work with artists like Jermaine Jackson, Jermaine Stewart,
I saw the one that you did with Jermaine Jackson that I think you had originally intended for the other artist to record, and which is a great song, by the way. I listened to it even this morning. I'm like, wow, this is an awesome song. Your songs, these are not just, you know, just dancey dance songs and just put them away and forget about them. They actually stand up and, you know, in time. Like, I said, wow, this is great. I mean, quite frankly. And I said, you know, to me, these songs can be re-recorded or re-released and all that wonderful good stuff. Do you feel the same way? Do you feel that they've, like, stood the test of time?
Yeah, I think so. I listen to them all the time. Like I like you said, I listen to Feel the Need, the one that I did for Jermaine Jackson.
Sure.
Yeah, I love that song. And
I remember that time frame because he had put out Don't Take It Personal and all of that. I remember that. And which project did you do for Jermaine Stewart? I love Jermaine Stewart. I'm a big fan of his. You know, we lost him way too soon.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, which project did you work with Jermaine on, Jermaine Stewart? Do you remember that?
Yes, I worked I did a dance remix to We Don't Have to Take Your Clothes Off.
Really? Probably the one I was dancing to.
I did a dance remix to that came out really, really good, I think, you know, and it played in a lot of the clubs because of the dance remix.
I have to give you credit on the remix. I don't know if folks give you enough credit on that. Your remixes are amazing. So, I don't know. I know because you're such an amazing writer and you producer extraordinaire and all of that. But also, the remixes that I've heard and that you've done. So, this stems from being a great DJ down there in Florida. Where did that come from that you have this ability to take these songs and literally reconstruct them, if you will, and turn out great, tracks like that?
I think probably from being a DJ and also a musician, it helps too because, I would see what works on the floor and then I kind of try to incorporate it into my mixes so that it keeps the floor dancing. Like when you hear Pointer Return, people just jump out of their chairs,
exactly.
Which is like, it would give me goosebumps, you know. I would just, I mean, I'm at the club sitting, in the corner, and then the DJ plays Point of Return, and I see people kind of like scream, get up, and go to the dance floor, and it's the best feeling in the world.
Yes, and that's when you really knew you had something. That song, wow. And I loved all of, Let Me Be the One, just, you know, Seasons Change, all of those amazing songs, I have to say.
Thank you.
Yes, you're pleased. These are... It's not just me. It's, big, big hit records out there. I love the lineup that you had. And by the time I got, Joya, and I think you had mentioned was one of the leads in Jeanette and Anne. So I just love that lineup that you had at that time. I just thought, my goodness. So have you stayed in touch with these amazing women?
Yes. I talk to Joya all the time. The other girls are more, in a different state and stuff, so I don't talk to them too much. But Joya, we keep in touch all the time. We actually worked on a couple of things together, not too long ago. So I keep in touch with Joya mostly.
Wow. Now, you are still in the music game. You haven't left the music game. Let me just make that clear. So what can you tell us out there? What might we be able to look forward to or anything you want to add to that?
Well, I'm working on several projects. I'm working on a song for the COVID relief. It's called, we're calling it for now, Son After the Rain, for now. And what I'm doing is kind of like a, trying to put together like a We Are the World kind of thing with a bunch of different artists. I got Larry Blackman from Cameo. Bernard from Surface.
We just had David on our show.
Bernard Jackson from Surface, and a few rappers too, Tretch and Lazy Bone. And Lazy Bone, and everybody's giving their time, because they think it's good to try to help other people. So everybody's been very, very nice. We're trying to get Gladys Knight on there, which I think we will. Womack sisters.
Yes.
We already got Butch from Tavares.
Oh yes, yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think they did the song "Heaven Must Be Missing." And I think that was one of Tavares.
One. Yes, that was Tavares. Yes. Their biggest one was though the ballad. Remember What I Told You to Forget.
Oh, hold it. No, I don't. What was the biggest one?
That was the biggest hit. So remember what I told you to forget.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. Well, listen, I just love them. I love all of these groups, and I'm just blown away, and I just wish you nothing but the best on these projects. And
Thank you.
Yes, let us know how you're coming along with them, you know, and any folks that we could send in your direction, we will. We absolutely
great,
will.
Great, yeah. Thank you. I have a few little compilations that I did in the 80s that I have on iTunes, so if I think you were going to check them out yourself. I don't know if you did. It was called Freestyle Soft Beach Style.
I think I checked out so much of your music that it's not even funny. I was on Spotify. I was on so many different things and looking at every single thing, and I listened to song after song, some of which I have to really say I had forgotten the titles, and then when I listened to them, I was like, yeah, I remember that song, and I remember that. Now, I do want to touch on one other part of this back in the day, because to me, you're working with Clive Davis or producing these albums and all of that. That, you know, he was, it might have been around the time he was working with Whitney and Aretha and all these big people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it was a time. Yeah, yeah,
wasn't
it was that time, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big deal. I said, my goodness.
Yeah, Clive Davis is a genius, when it comes to putting projects together and teams together. Yeah, he's a genius.
Yeah, he's a genius. And Kashif, the late Kashif.
Kashif, I worked with him on a song. I did a song for him.
Exactly. I'm like, wow. So I know you don't like to be considered so much a legend out there, but you are. And I have to tell everybody, of course for me, I kind of stumbled across because I just love Seasons Change so much. It has never left anything for me, not too long without playing it or every so often going back and listening. And I looked up the words, and I was just so moved by this. I mean, you're just, in order to write like that, it's got to come from somewhere. So we just love it. And, and then to figure out that you had done all that you were responsible for writing albums, and I'm like, and I think I asked you about freestyle, if you were familiar. I'm going to put myself out there on blast. I'm like, he's the king of freestyle, my goodness. And I just learned so much from reading and finding out and all of this wonderful good stuff. I love Stevie B. I love the whole entire genre and all that it represents. So good stuff. So, Louis, anything just to tell the folks, they're budding writers out there, budding songwriters. I'm one. I'm raising my hand right now. So what kind of advice can you give to someone like myself? We've gotten lyrics. We've got the lyrics down, and I saw about, what advice? Let me just go there. What advice can you share in terms of how we should get started or the next step after you've got piles and piles of songs?
Well, what I kind of think about sometimes is that when you write songs, you tend to want to write them so deep and so great that you kind of like missing the audience. So what I try to tell everybody, just keep it simple, keep it catchy, keep it commercial, and then you'll get that magic in that song. In my albums, if you listen to them, you'll hear that I do very commercial songs. I try to at least, but then I throw in there a couple of songs like you'll hear in the first album. You hear a song called December, and the second one you call Didn't Hurt to Hurt Me. Those are deeper songs that that have a little bit more meaning, and I put them in there just for once people get tired of listening to the pop songs, then they can hear something that's a little deeper. But like I said, keep those for later, for if you want to break out, make it simple, make it very catchy, and make it commercial. Easy to follow. That's really what you got to do.
Doesn't get any better than that. Oh,
yeah,
right.
You know, a great person to listen to is Casey and the Sunshine Band. Their songs are so great and so catchy. That's why they're still being played in tons of movies
right.
and stuff like that. because they're just great catchy songs, you know, and if you listen to those, then you'll get some good ideas.
That's right. I stumbled across a Casey and the Sunshine video maybe in the last 24 hours or so, and I stopped for a moment because it was so deep and just an amazing groove. But I still don't think that folks knew that this music would be, that we'd be listening to it, you know, decades later. And so
exactly.
Just blown away. Well, listen, anything you want to leave us with today, Lewis, I just have to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Any shout outs?
I listen to Hair Nation Morning Show every day. Hair Nation Morning Show.
Oh,
my favorite.
Well, listen, I
have to admit, I had a mullet in the 80s, so, you know, maybe you could do something for me.
We'll talk. We'll definitely talk. Well, listen, the creator, the absolute creator of this amazing group and working with so many others, and we're, of course, talking about Exposé and so many others and writing those albums and just having so many hit records and just being a mega force in the freestyle movement, if you will, and also music in general, and just really picking up, like you said, where disco kind of left off. Again, I want to thank you for being our guest on the Hair Radio Morning Show, and we're going to still go out and listen to these songs, and we're going to have you back soon when your next project is out. So I want to thank you.
Yes, definitely.
All right. You got it. Lewis Martinet, thank you. Folks, keep it right. My pleasure. Keep it right here. We've got a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. Stay with us.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry
Jones Bond of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Terry Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. Yes, I am Carrie Hines. It's Friday morning. It's September 17th of 2021. September 17th of 2021. I want to thank you for joining us. It's been quite an amazing broadcast this morning. If you really are just kind of joining us and tuning in, then you might have missed some of the amazing, wonderful broadcasting that we did earlier today. We were able to get on some of the folks who have been a big part of what we're doing, folks like Larry Stevens, who kind of tours the country with his magazine and all of that wonderful good stuff, specifically helping hairstylists out there with promotion. And I'm going to get on. This is a classic interview from a wonderful woman who we were kind of launching the Year of the Woman, and Gloria Lee is her name. She's kind of a wonderful, older adult, and she's just so supportive of what we're doing on the radio show. And she has written a book, and she's got a certain way to communicate her thoughts. We'll let you draw your own conclusions. But what I do want to say is this, and this is that we're kind of tapping into some of our content that we've had. As you guys know, we're today's broadcast number 610, show number 610, and it's Friday morning. We figured we'll kind of dig into our archives and share some content that we don't often get a chance to share. On the other side of this, I'll be back because I have some big updates to talk with you guys about, and some of the what to also expect in the upcoming shows. We'll talk about that talk a little bit. We have some other things to say. So this is Digging in the Archives. And again, my special guest, she was on our show. This piece, I believe, is from maybe about 2 good years ago.
Again, her name is Gloria Lee, and I thought she just did a great job. So take a listen. We'll talk about it and get your feedback. All right, so stay with us for a lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. Gonna have some fun. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Terry High. We have a very special guest with us today. She is an author. The Hair Radio Morning Show would like to welcome Miss Gloria Lee. Gloria, welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
I thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure to finally get you on our broadcast. Now, I have to just jump right on in. You are the reason we're celebrating the Women of Courage Month all month long. And I like to say this, it's not just this month, every day here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So we want to start by you telling the folks all about your beautiful books. You've got two, and they're titled Women of Courage. So let's start with book one. Tell us a little bit, what exactly is Women of Courage all about? Tell us.
I began writing the books because I wanted women to understand how much courage it takes to be a woman. See, our courage is not acknowledged. Men acknowledge their courage. They speak about courage on the battlefield. They speak about courage being a minister, but female courage has never been acknowledged, and that's wrong, and it has been used to enslave women because it does not let women understand the power that they have inside them. And I began writing the books because I wanted women to see other women who have succeeded because they had courage. So I had began to research my mission, actually, when this first started, was to find out why men killed women. So I began researching that. But as I began to research, I began to gather other information, and I began to see that part of the problem was the fact that women did not acknowledge themselves. Women have been told that they're servants, that they're supposed to serve. Correct. That's fine. But they haven't been told that they have a right to be their own person. And because of that, women live desperate lives. They live lives that they hate. They learn to despise themselves. And in turn, they are unhappy. For years, especially between 1920, 1950, women either drank in the basement, they'd have a little sherry every day, and then when tranquilizers became part of the vogue, especially for white women, okay, they began, the white doctors would prescribe them tranquilizers. This was based on the theory that women were hysterical, okay? So this part of their spirit had to be controlled through medication. But actually, what was happening is women were internalizing their anger and their rage because they were forced to live lives that they did not want. But let me give you an example. For years, poor women, poor white and black women, invented things, okay? I bet you do not know who actually invented the refrigerator.
No,
I bet you don't know cool, and then, oh, no, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to
look. Uh-oh.
Who invented the bulletproof vest? Now, here's the secret. Men kept that a secret from women, that women invented certain things, okay? That women were chemists, women were physicists. But many of the inventions of poor white women and poor black women were stolen because when they went to have their inventions patented, the patent office told them that they couldn't, females couldn't patent inventions. Did you know that?
Well, that doesn't really surprise us, though, Gloria Lee, because that's, the historical part of this whole context in this country, and that was the charge that they had. And, in fact, as you were explaining this history here about women not necessarily not being, able to do certain things because they're female, but what surprises me, and I'm sure our listeners of the Hair Radio Morning Show can certainly identify, is that you could almost take the word female or woman out of what you're saying and insert the word black.
Both. That's exactly what I'm saying. Any person that was not white, and I have to be careful because this is a radio show and I don't want to be vulgar. But anyway, you had to wear pants, be white and wear pants. Then you were given acknowledgement. But here's the thing. I want you to appreciate this. When the women went to the patent office to have their ideas patented, what happened to their ideas when they weren't accepted by the patent office? They were stolen. That's my point. They were stolen. And then white man walking to the patent office, his information's patent, which he stole from a female or a black person, and he made money off of it.
Now, Gloria, I do have to ask you, where, because these are some pretty inflammatory claims, perhaps, that some may say. So what kind of research did you have to do to kind of substantiate these claims? Because you've written quite an explosive couple of books here. And and folks, if you're just joining us out there, let's be clear. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. This is a very special broadcast. And I'm Carrie Hines. And with us on the line today, we have the author of Women of Courage books, Gloria Lee. And so we love, your forthrightness. But what do you say when folks say, well, how can you prove certain things that you've put into the books? What do you say, Gloria Lee?
First of all, I say take the information from my book and then go to the library and verify it. It's real simple. But when you want to verify it, be prepared because this information is not consolidated, okay? It's everywhere. But you have to go into a library and pull it out of the newspapers. Who wants the world to know that women are as inventive as men? Who wants the world to know that women have as much courage as men? Nobody walking wearing pants wants that because they want the enslavement of women. It's profitable. Here, I don't want to jump ahead, but listen to me. When blacks were brought to this country, the only way they were able to control the black man was to attack the black woman. They attacked her mind. And that is the same way that the white male has been able to control the entire world is by attacking the mind to make a person feel less than or that he's not capable of. Sir, you are as capable of doing anything that you want to do if you want to do it and if you're willing to pay the price. Here, Michael Jordan, let me give you an example. I studied him, okay? when his father was murdered, it upset me. So I began to watch Michael Jordan to see how he responded. Okay, not only is he the hero, he's a black male. And I wanted to know how he was going to react to these two males. But as I was researching him, I found out how he became Michael Jordan. Do you know how long he would stay on the basketball court?
Oh, right, through the study. Yes, I heard. For hours and hours and through repetition. And
yes.
See, Gloria, I was just sharing exactly what you just mentioned. I was sharing that with a gentleman today. And I said, you know, it is through repetition and through study and just all these years of research and just it makes you into an expert at what you do. And you may not even realize that you qualify for that level of knowledge and that
yes.
title, but you do.
That's
now, Gloria,
how he became Mike.
I love what you say. I love everything that you have said. And I appreciate you, you know, just letting it just go on out there. I want to start, though, at the beginning. We're going to take a little bit of it. I want to go back to really what has kind of set you up to be Gloria Lee. So share with the Hair Radio Morning Show fans, where are you from? Where were you born? And where do you live in these days? In America. So share with us some of your background. Where did you get your start?
Okay, I was born in Detroit, Michigan. And
shout out to Detroit folks. Okay, we have to do that.
I was born May 7th, 1945. I would say that there are three people that affected my personality deeply. I mean, I've been affected by lots of people, but it was my grand aunt, my father, and my mother. I had a grand aunt, and the way she earned money, she refused to work in houses, okay? She would not do day labor. She pushed a push cart, and I started working with her when I was six. And I would go with her pushing the push cart down the street, and we would pick up scrap. This is a time when tin and things like that were valuable, and you would gather this stuff up, cardboard, glass, whatever, and you push it to, we would call it a refuse place now, but it was a junkyard at that time. And they would weigh the refuge, and we would get paid. Well, see, I love money, so I would always like to be with my great aunt because she would pay me at the end of the day. We would go miles and miles walking, going through refuge and picking up clothing, those sort of things. When we were walking, she would talk to me. This is years later that I realized that she was shaping my personality. The one thing that she told me that I maintained all of my life, a woman is never to be without money. I want your listeners to hear me. If you are a female, you are never to be without money. I don't care if you're hungry. Drink water. That's what she told me.
But why not? Why not?
Listen to me. If there's a choice between eating and spending your money, you drink a glass of water. The reason why a woman is never to be without money is because you don't want to sell your body and have no man put his hands on you.
Mm.
Because that is the destruction of women. Why do you think that when warring factions took over Europe, the Russians, for really example, during World War II, do you know that the Russian army raped every female in Germany between the ages of 8 and 80? Do you know how many females they raped? Because rape is power, and it is to destroy your psyche. So therefore, if you are a woman and you do not have any money, because I was on the street when I lost everything I had. I was on the street with my son, and all I had was a car, excuse me, and I had no money. The thought came to me. I was standing in Oak Park on Greenfield and 11 Mile Road. I was standing in the Kmart parking lot.
Oak and Park, is that in, isn't that Illinois?
No, sir. That's Oak Park, Michigan. It's right
Oak Park,
outside.
Michigan.
It's a suburb. It's a suburb of Detroit.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
And the thought came to me, well, why don't you go with this man and get you some money so you can feed your son? For a second, that idea came to me, because that's an alternative that's always given to women. See, the man tells you, look, you ain't got no money, then you can just sell your body. That's the easiest way to live. It's not. That's self-destruction. So consequently, when I want you to understand, it was cold. It was October. I had no money. And I think like a quarter tank of gas. And that, you know, ain't nobody going to know. And then I remembered my grand aunt. That was the other thing that she told me. You let no man put his hands on you. And she started telling
so
me
So she insisted that you keep, your grand aunt insisted that you keep funds in your pocket, have money. Now,
yes,
what's your grand aunt's name? We should just pay tribute to her today.
Maddie? It was Madeline, but they called her Maddie.
Maddie.
She was about 5'9", 5'10". And
so she stood
freckles.
Tall in many ways.
Yes, yes, yes. She was very, very strong, because, you know, pushing that push cart for miles.
You had to
power.
Be. Exactly. Yes. Wow.
And I want you to know that women in China still push carts.
Yes,
you know
I've been to China.
Yes.
I've been. So, yes, I know. Now, I just want to let folks know, again, if you're just joining us, again, today is a very special broadcast that we're kicking off our entire month talking to Gloria Lee. Now, she is the author of Women of Courage. Now, Gloria, I do want to kind of go back to this first book. I do want to talk about it. The title is Women of Courage, and on this book, the cover, I love the beauty of the book cover.
Would you be kind
enough to tell our listeners who, if you can name the women that you've pictured, I'd love it. If you can just give us a few, if you'd like, talk about those women. And you got to remember out there, guys, for you guys listening to the show, it's difficult to really come up with just a few of you know, women that you feel the most courageous women. So you really are someone who took time and effort and energy into creating this. Would you be kind enough to tell us who some of the women that you put on the cover and why?
Well, I will tell you, one of them is Mother Teresa.
And I have a Mother Teresa story for you, too, by the way. I have a connection with Mother Teresa as well. But, yes, you go ahead. I'll tell you guys a little later. Go right ahead, Gloria. You put Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa was like in the one, I think, the corner, if I'm not mistaken. I love that.
Yes, yes. There's another woman that I put there for a particular reason. I wanted to give recognition to this woman. Her name is Iris Chan. She is an American Chinese author, and I felt that many, many, many people do not know of her work. I'm not going to tell you what she did. I think women should go and find out. Her name is Iris Chan, C-H-A-N-G.
Well, hold it. Now, if we buy your book, Women of Courage, we're going to find out. Well, okay, that's what we're going to do. We're going to find out. That's where we're doing our research. Who else do you have, Gloria Lee?
Now, I want you to know what she did was very, very painful.
Oh, okay.
And this is why the book is Women of Courage. It takes courage to do things painful. It's not pleasant. But there are things that must be done even though they are painful. Now, another woman on the cover is Eleanor Roosevelt.
Tell us why.
And Eleanor Roosevelt was not prejudiced. And she spoke her mind when it came to black people. And not only did she speak her mind, she did certain things to make and to ensure that people knew where she stood about black people. And again, I'm not going to tell you what she did, but that's because you got to remember.
So you Gloria Lee, you know how to tease. I thought I could tease. No. I'm a distant second. You know how to tease a book. I love it. So Gloria, tell us. Now, you said, and that's great, we got to get the book, Women of Courage, to find out some of these amazing stories that you've assembled and some of your favorite women. Now, who else do you have?
Okay. Now, this is another person. Her name is, now, I cannot really pronounce her name. She was the Prime Minister of Pakistan. Now, I want you to understand that that was a very dangerous occupation for women in Pakistan. I think her name is pronounced Binzarir, but her last name is B-H-U-T-T-O.
Oh, Bhutto.
Yes. But, again, you need to know what happened to her. It took courage for her to be who she was.
I think I remember her. I remember the story. This one I'm familiar with. Go right ahead.
It took courage to... See, it takes courage to say no.
Right.
It really does. It takes courage.
But I'm not going to tell you what I know. I'm not going to say it either. I'm in the Gloria Lee fan club. And so I'm not going to tell you. You will get the book. The fans of our show, I encourage you to buy these amazing books, Women of Courage, and Gloria Lee, as she's telling you, she's sharing with you a lot of the women that she finds the most courageous and why, and you will discover exactly. Some you may be familiar with, like my own connection with, I like to call it a connection, but I've never been to Calcutta, but when I really look at the amazing artistry of the work of Mother Teresa. And I remember my connection with her was that I had a wonderful doctor where I used to work. And the doctor, Dr. Pankow, was just one, she was just somebody that I spoke with on a regular basis. And I loved it. And Dr. Pankow sent me a picture of she along with Mother Teresa. And that meant the world to me to have the both of them on one picture. And I used to talk to Dr. Pankow every day. And that's how I was most connected to her. And she told me all about, she went out and went over to, I think it was Calcutta with with Mother Teresa. And this was amazing, and I kept that picture for a long time, and I've always felt a certain kinship with her, and also the same with Lady Di, but that's another story. So that was just the fact of how beautiful it was when I saw Mother Teresa on the cover of Gloria Lee's book. Amazing. And great choices. The women you've selected, amazing. Amazing. But you forgot one.
Who?
Gloria Lee.
The deepness, did you? Oh, my God.
Gloria Lee.
I didn't touch Gloria Lee. I've been forced to. Several women have been forcing me to because they told me that I have to talk about myself.
You have to, Gloria.
Yes, I've been told that. A friend of mine is insisting that I write about myself.
Yes, because you know what? You share amazing stories about these wonderful women, and they were. Everything that you have described and you put into your book and more. But what really makes it interesting is the story that you tell of yourself through your eyes. And there's only one person can tell that story, and that's Gloria Lee. Now, folks, I have to say, when I kind of discovered who you are, I was quite moved. And it takes a lot to move me. I've been doing radio programming for 2.5 decades. And to discover someone who has been just working tirelessly to educate, inform women, and particularly women of color, and you resonate, and our stories kind of coincide because that's all that we've done. My platform has been to do it through the hair and beauty industry. And so I am so honored to have Gloria Lee with us. And I'm also honored to declare this month as Women of Courage Month. And not just this month, but every day here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, Gloria Lee is our guest today. And I want to kind of go back a little bit on this as well. In that book, you make a dedication. And so this first part of many series that we're going to explore. Today was just an introduction teaser to the many parts and that we have of Miss Gloria Lee, so we're real excited about it. But I do want to pay tribute. Now, this is a touching dedication in your book that just moved me, and there's a part that I'll share with you in just a moment. But can you tell us, and I want to make sure I say her name correctly, Allison, was it Pipemeyer?
Yes.
Can you tell us who Allison Pipemeyer was and what she means to you and why you decided to dedicate the first book, the Women of Courage book, to her? Tell us why.
When I learned of her, I was researching women who had been murdered in the Carolinas. And I saw the announcement of her death, and I began to research some of her work. And what pained me so much is that we lost such a caring person. This woman loved people. You could tell it from her work. You could tell it from the things that she did. She didn't just work an 8-hour day. She worked tirelessly writing for various publications, talking to her students, advocating. Do you know how hard it is to get people to advocate and to stay focused? That's a lot of hard work. And this woman paid the price. And all of her life's work was to help people in need. She took on some very tough problems in our country. And she didn't back down.
I do want to say, just to let everybody know, because I think this is so critical and important and can mean so much to folks. Allison Pipemeyer was the director of Women and Gender Studies and the associate professor of English at the College of Charleston. Now, she contributed a column for the Charleston City Paper and wrote several editorials for the New York Times Motherlode blog And so we lost her back in 2016, ironically on my birthday, from brain cancer. But what I love about what you wrote is that she dedicated her life to writing about these subjects that you talk about, such as same-sex parents, women's rights, raising yes. disabled children, Black Lives Matter movement.
Yes.
And at the time of her death, now she spoke into the future. And this
there
is what
go.
She had
you,
to say.
Yeah, you got it. You,
she wrote,
you
got I it. Do presume to know what a next life would be like. I don't even know what to imagine. In a next life, I hope I will be in a place where people would need me, where there's something meaningful to do. A next life without work, without purpose, would be disappointing. And so what really stayed with me when I read this, and I had to write it down separately and apart from all of my research with you, Gloria Lee, I wrote this down because what she writes is that it takes courage, or what she said, it takes courage to live. It takes courage to wake every day and try to make something of your life, knowing you will meet unfathomable challenges. And that stays with me because that is not just can every woman relate to that. Every person of color on the planet Earth, we get up, we decide to go forward. And you have the winds just blowing you and you're just barely holding on. So, Gloria Lee, I want to thank you for introducing me to Miss Alison Pipemeyer. And you can research her yourself, AlisonPiePmeier. So thank you. And I'm saying to you, the easiest place to research her is when you read Women of Courage by Gloria Lee. Books 1 and 2. So, Gloria, please tell the fans of the Hair Radio Morning Show how they can get a hold of your books.
Okay. They can purchase a book on my website, which is touchedbythelight.us. Now, the books are not sold in bookstores, and I will not sell them on Amazon. When you purchase any of my books, a portion of that money will go to help women directly. I believe in walking up to a woman with children and asking her, how can I help? There's a lot of women that need automobiles to get back and forth to work and also to protect their children. So 30% of this particular book, the Women of Courage series, is going to go to help women. And I explain that on my website, that it is very important that we support and encourage women to stand up and take control of their lives. And when you reach and just give somebody a helping hand, an acknowledgement, you'd be surprised how you can change your life. And that's the purpose of Women of Courage, is for this book to change lives.
Well, I think you've heard it first right here, folks. Gloria Lee, the author of Women of Courage. And I tell you, your website, touchedbythelight.us, wonderful. I love it. Just fantastic.
Thank you.
So you're doing
Thank
some
you.
Great work out there. Again, you've been listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. My guest today, author Gloria Lee, again, Women of Courage. These are the books that we're talking about, and she's been sharing quite a bit of information with us today, and this is just the first part. We've got Gloria all month as we celebrate and continue to celebrate Women of Courage. So now, not today, we are going to tease it. But the next time you join us, Gloria, we've got a lot to talk about and where we go forward from here. So those are things that, that's one of the biggest things that we're going to kind of, you know, corner and ask you about the next time that you're with us on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So we're going to be checking in with you for all kinds of wonderful things. And I just want to say thank you just for beginning to kind of, you know, let us peer into your world a little bit and why and how you have come with these wonderful, wonderful things. We also, next time, want to talk about several signs of courageous women. And so there's so many different things that we're going to share. So, again, now, I do want to say this. Gloria is also a member of the Hair Radio Social Network site. So let's be clear. You can connect with Gloria Lee if you are a member yourself. And how do you become a member? It's free.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hunt.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
There's a well-known saying, home is where the heart is, and not just your heart, but your hair. Home Hair Solutions is an all-organic styling and conditioning product line that's available at SalonNiquelle.com. The HOME in Home Hair Solutions is an acronym. H is for hydration, O is for oil, M is for moisture, and E is for earth. It doesn't get much better than that. A complete line of cleansers and hair mounds that will keep your hair looking great and you feeling great about what you're using in your hair. Home Hair Solutions is the answer. Go to SalonNiquelle.com. For more details, that's S-A-L-O-N, in like Nancy, I-Q-U-E-L.com.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of The Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand, completely living off of Black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one Black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois, and that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have two little girls. That means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few Black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about Black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our Black community, my life. The Black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most Black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring Black hair care back. There are great Black hair care companies that exist, Black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the black community can own the biggest black hair care brands, that the black community can own black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in black neighborhoods, and black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the black hair care products that only black people use, and they are not owned by black people. So I've issued the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge, and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a black-owned company.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air.
I'm Carrie Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who'll be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details.
Now you can listen to our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network and shop all in the same place. Go to hairradio.com. We've got around-the-clock hair and beauty radio talk. And while you're there, buy your favorite books, hair products, tickets to live hair and beauty events, and much more. And if you'd like to feature your products in our hairradio.com website store or be a guest on the Hair Radio Broadcast Network, contact us at hairradio.com and reach the world.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It is Friday morning. It's September 17th of 2021. Yes, and we're kind of closing out this week. We want to thank you guys for being with us. It's been a remarkable week in so many different ways. But I have to say, just in looking back, you know, to say thank you to so many folks who reached out. As you guys know, my family suffered a great loss with my brother Donald passing. And I just wanted to say that he was a big part of everything that I've been able to accomplish with Hair Radio and my wonderful live hair events. So he'll be missed. And I just want to say thank you to so many folks who comforted me and the well wishes for me and my family. And you guys, I shared on social media an excerpt when he was on this very broadcast. We did a special nighttime version, probably going from 2018 into 2019. And he was on this very show to talk about
it was really him just coming on to wish everybody, you know, Happy New Year type thing. And it ended up that he started promoting for our, at that time, live hair event, which was an event we had in 2019. So he was just on to say, you know, Happy New Year, and he just went into this long thing to make sure that everybody was present for my live hair event. And that just meant so much. It resonated so very much with me. And he exemplified that same spirit when the event actually happened. He would be there riding around on his little cart, passing out flyers and telling folks that we were at the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, and to come by and all that wonderful good stuff. He was my family representative. I made sure that my dear brother Donald called everybody in the family. He loved to talk on the phone, and he just always stayed true to that. And when it came to my beard product, he's the one who encouraged me to put my face on my own Caribbean beard oil, which I've done so in loving memory of what his spirit, what he said and told me and encouraged me to do. So he'll be remembered. And now I have some other things I do want to get to this week before we close out here. We have about a half hour left of this week on the broadcast. Want to say there's been so much going on and so many things because of the pandemic. We couldn't do our big live hair show. We moved it back about three times already. Vendors, everybody's on standby because of this new variant, you know, being so transmissible. At the same time, things have been opening back up, and particularly here in New York, which is where I'm located and broadcasting from live right now, they have reopened Broadway. And so that means a whole lot to the folks in this city. So many other things are opening up. And I thought it would be a great time, particularly that we're getting into the cooler months, to have a place where we could unite for a day or two. And offer a finite number. We don't have a big auditorium or anything like that, but I thought it would be good to begin some more education workshops for my hair friends and also the business entrepreneurs. I think this is great. We have a lot to share. We have a lot to talk about. Folks have been all wound up, and I think this will be great. And, of course, it's we're only going to have a certain number of folks there with plenty of precautions with regards to the COVID situation. It's a beautiful location in New York that I will disclose in coming weeks as soon as we move forward just a tad with it. But I want you guys to be the first to know, the Hair Radio Morning Show fans to be the very first to know about what we have going on here and what we're planning for. Because I, like you, I want to move ahead with this you know, things that are going on for in the hair business, and also kind of put this whole COVID thing in our rear view mirror. We've got to get back to life. We've got to, you know, do the things that are going to be necessary, that are going to help propel us forward as a country. And very, very important. So I want to, while we're at the, you know, talking about this, I want to kind of encourage the people in this community to please get your shots. Please. It will extend your life should you contract this awful disease. It cuts down on the severity. Doesn't mean it can't be transmitted to you. It just means that it may not affect you or have the same, you know, horrific effect that it has had on so many other folks who have decided not to get the vaccine and then contract this awful disease. So I feel, yeah, I totally understand with the track record of America when it, you know, as it pertains to people of color and vaccines. We get it. But please, please, this is science. This is important. There have been millions and millions of people who have already gotten the vaccine. I'm raising my hand.
and we're just fine and dandy, if not even better. Often when I go out and about here in New York City, at least, I see folks hacking and coughing and this and that. I take off, of course, and kind of go the other way, but that's another story. But wear your mask. I continue to wear my mask. I wear, and if I can, sometimes I'll even double up. It's still important, and yes, I'm completely and 100% past. You know, I have, knock on wood, been very lucky and very fortunate. I encourage you to be the same. Be vigilant. Be vigilant. So here we are. It's the end of the week. Next week, we'll be back on the air starting on Tuesday morning. We will run likely from Tuesday till about Thursday. I think I'm going to be off on Friday of next week. We have some, I think Tuesday through Friday. We'll see. We'll let you guys know. But tune in on Tuesday morning. For a very special broadcast. I'm going to see if we can get some of our heavy hitters to join us. It'll be on the 21st of September of 2021. So 9-21-21. Join us. We're going to see if we can put together something special and then have a big announcement as well to make on that Tuesday broadcast. So this will be very, very nice, and we want you guys to kind of stay with us. Let's take a little bit of a music break. We have not really done so much this morning, and we'll be back with you. I kind of like this. It's, you know, classic Diana. Stay with us.
Seven, eight, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
One in a Million, the history of Madam C.J. Walker and her entrepreneurial legacy. Not even her poor and difficult beginnings stymied Madam Walker's road to greatness. Born December 23, 1867, roughly 2 years after the alleged emancipation of her race, she was an orphan at 7, a wife at 14, a mother at 17, and a widow by 20. The woman who would become known as the first self-made female millionaire and the greatest benefactress of her race was born the daughter of Owen and Minerva Breedlove, poor ex-slaves living on a cotton farm in Louisiana. They named their special little girl Sarah Breedlove. A washerwoman by trade, at the age of 33 in 1900, Sarah began selling a product door to door which she had formulated to remedy her own hair loss. She pinpointed the root of her hair problems, which was the scalp, and created hair care products and a beauty regimen for hair growth and maintenance that focused on the need for a clean and healthy scalp, scalp protection, and scalp stimulation for maximum hair growth. Her first product would eventually be called Madam C.J. Walker's Wonderful Hair Grower, and she boldly and proudly used her own likeness on her jars and her own before and after pictures to demonstrate her product's effectiveness. Per Madam's own words, she abhorred the impression held by some that she claimed to straighten hair. She emphatically stated, "I grow hair," and that there would be no hair-growing business today had I not started it. She described her concept and method of hair growth as beauty culture because she compared growing hair to growing and cultivating garden plants. She then broadened this concept of beauty culture by incorporating the value of cleanliness and professionalism, which emphasized the overall appearance, moral conduct, and character of the Black woman. Black women from all over the country began writing letters to Madam Walker attesting to the benefits of her products. By setting up a special correspondence course of beauty culture in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then a manufacturing facility in Indiana, and later a beauty college in New York City, Madam was able to further establish and promulgate her program of beauty culture, which trained the Black female in three areas. First, the Black woman was taught the proper presentation of herself. She was to be clean, neat, properly attired, and well-mannered. Second, she was taught how to use Madam's hair care system on customers. And third, she was taught how to sell Madam's hair care products to customers. In so doing, Madam C.J. Walker provided a solution to the root of the Black woman's demise. She raised the Black woman's self-esteem and confidence about her own beauty and intelligence, and she empowered the Black woman economically, thus freeing her from white servitude and male dependency. This accomplishment is even more amazing when put in the context of the time in which these things were done and in the context of Madam's own background. The time, one historian called the nadir, or lowest point in the history of the Black race outside of slavery itself. The blessings of freedom was now marred by the blatant terrorist acts of the Ku Klux Klan and those like-minded individuals working in collusion with them. The harsh reality faced by the vast majority of Blacks living in this era was that the number of lynchings peaked during the early 1900s, as did other backlashes sparked by Reconstruction, such as the burning of Black churches and schools and the establishment of Jim Crow laws. During this dark period, most Black women were either sharecroppers or washerwomen and house servants for whites. Madam Walker was no exception, but she was, however, exceptional. Madam Walker moved her ever-expanding special correspondence course business, founded on her system of beauty culture, to Indianapolis, Indiana, on February 19, 1910. She then purchased and paid for her home, adjoining which was a factory and laboratory, located at 640 North West Street. She endeared herself to the citizens of Indianapolis when she contributed $1,000 to the establishment of the Senate Avenue YMCA. It is reported that she was the only woman to make such a donation. Madam herself, when referring to the YMCA donation, had this to say, quote, "In referring to that $1,000 gift, I don't want you to lay so much stress on it, and do not say that I am the only one. You might say that I was the first and caused others to awaken to the sense of their duty in helping deserving causes for the benefit of the race," end quote. Not long after her move to Indianapolis, Madam Walker also became a member of Bethel AME Church, one of the oldest and most influential churches in the black community, to which Madam Walker contributed generously. In less than 2 years after moving to Indianapolis, on September 2, 1911, Madam C.J. Walker petitioned the Indiana Secretary of State to become incorporated, and on September 19, 1911, exactly 1 year and 7 months since her arrival in Indianapolis, the Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company of Indiana Incorporated was established, Madam Walker naming herself president and owner of all 1,000 shares of stock. A relentless worker and ingenious marketer and saleswoman, Madam Walker had thought to place her system of hair care products in black colleges all across the United States. She also regularly advertised in black newspapers, and she eventually placed her products in drugstores. As she traveled throughout the country, she wrote letters to her general manager in order to instruct him on how best to run her factory in her absence and how to implement all of her new ideas. However, the Madam Walker agents, Madam's recruited sales force, were her biggest asset. Madam held public meetings in churches, rented lodge halls and other such facilities, and put on demonstrations, including a slide presentation, in order to recruit black women to become Walker agents. Madam Walker taught and trained them in the methods of application and proper use of her hair oils and vegetable shampoo. Eventually, Madam organized a national convention for her Walker agents, giving away prizes and other incentives to motivate and energize her ever-growing troops of Walker agents. Sales generated from Madam Walker's manufacturing company and the hair care products it produced enabled Madam to give birth to yet another legacy, as Madam became known as the greatest benefactress of her race. Through monies earned and derived from Madam's work in the hair-growing business, Madam Walker regularly donated large sums of money to charity and to individuals of her race who were in need. In fact, Madam was so self-sacrificing and freely giving that those closest to her were worried that she would become financially ruined. Desiring all blacks to have decent homes, at times, Madam would assume mortgages of blacks who were financially strapped, allowing them to repay when and how they could. Various schools for blacks and certain social and civic organizations dedicated to the betterment of the black race were also beneficiaries of Madam's philanthropy. Though many have called Madam extravagant, her generosity and passion for her people were Madam's only extravagances. She gave not for self-aggrandizement, but rather to inspire other wealthy blacks to give likewise. Moreover, Madam's giving went well beyond monetary donations. She lent her name and time to worthy causes. She traversed the country, speaking against lynchings, and fought vehemently for the fair treatment of black soldiers who had served in America's military during World War I. Madam C.J. Walker was an ambassador of sorts, a spokesperson for all black-skinned people, a revolutionary, visionary, missionary force. It should therefore be quite obvious that Madam Walker's passing on May 25, 1919 was a tremendous loss to the black race. At that time, Madam had recruited over 25,000 black women from the United States Central America, and the Caribbean as door-to-door beauty culturist and was well on her way to Africa. Her net worth was over $1 million, making her the first female, regardless of color, to become a self-made millionaire. She is one of the most successful black entrepreneurs of all time and one of the first to utilize the method known today as direct sales marketing to distribute her products. She had also managed to build a 32-room mansion in Irvington, New York called Villa Loaro, which she had desired to be left as a monument to her name and as an example to her race of what hard work and black support of black enterprises could achieve. After Madam's 1919 passing, her hair care manufacturing corporation was used as collateral to secure the finances needed to build what is today known as the Madam Walker Theater Building. Completed in late 1927, the Walker Building Beauty Salon continues to operate there and continues to sell Madam C.J. Walker's original hair care products. Years later, in 1982, the trustees of Madam Walker's trust would deposit a large portion of Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company's business records, historical documents, pictures, and memorabilia with the Indiana Historical Society, who took on the task of painstakingly organizing and preserving the Madam Walker legacy. 74 years after the incorporation of the Madam Walker Company in 1985, the 1,000 shares of capital stock of Madam's corporation were sold to a man named Raymond L. Randolph, making him the first person since Madam Walker herself to own all 1,000 shares of stock in the original Madam Walker Company. A graduate of Attucks High School, Mr. Randolph had never dreamed that he would become the owner and caretaker of this phenomenal legacy. In honor of Madam C.J. Walker, Mr. Randolph placed Madam Walker's image back on the jars of her original hair care products with the words, "Since 1911," placed underneath it. Doing business today as Madam C.J. Walker Enterprises Incorporated, the hair care company founded by Madam C.J. Walker continues to manufacture and sell her original quality products, ensuring that the legacy of this remarkable woman never dies. The Madam Walker Agent Program has been reinstituted and is the main method by which her products are distributed today. On September 24, 2011, Madam C.J. Walker Enterprises sponsored a centennial celebratory walk called Tracing the Footsteps of a Legacy. This event marked the 100th year since the pivotal point in her entrepreneurial legacy when Madam Walker incorporated her manufacturing company, the Madam C.J. Walker business family, which includes the Madam Walker agents, will continue to keep Madam Walker's spirit alive and well by ensuring that her labor of love, her manufacturing business, continues operating according to the entrepreneurial blueprint she left behind and which is detailed in the historical documents of the company. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah Breedlove. You are indeed one in a million.
Hi, I'm Carrie Hines. I want to shout out to superstar hairstylist, industry legend, and my friend, Troy Ballard, a.k.a. Smooth Black of Smooth Black Inc. He's a hair biz educator, entrepreneur, and yes, he's known for coloring, cutting, and complete hair care services for the whole family. And now, you can hear him right here on Wednesday mornings, live at 8:30 Eastern, all the way from Southern California. Now, he's sharing a few trade secrets and so much more, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at ChairWatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
There's a well-known saying, home is where the heart is, and not just your heart, but your hair. Home Hair Solutions is an all-organic styling and conditioning product line that's available at SalonNiquelle.com. The HOME in Home Hair Solutions is an acronym. H is for hydration, O is for oil, M is for moisture, and E is for earth. It doesn't get much better than that. A complete line of cleansers and hair mounts that will keep your hair looking great and you feeling great about what you're using in your hair. Home Hair Solutions is the answer. Go to SalonNiquelle.com for more details. That's S-A-L-O-N, in like Nancy, I-Q-U-E-L.com. Well, it's that time to bring this episode of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it does not end here. The show continues over at our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network at www.hairradio.com. Now, I must thank today's great guests and our legacy advertisers. These are the folks who've been supporting our show over the years, including Dr. Raglan, Yolanda Raglan at FixYourFeet.com. They are the very best in foot care. She has two locations, one in New York City and the other in Maryland. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the amazing Troy Ballard, of course, from the West Coast out in Southern California. His company is called Smooth Black Ink. Now, he offers the very, very best in hair care for the entire family. He is a legendary hairstylist and educator. And also, he's a program host right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We just appreciate him again. That's Troy Ballard, a.k.a. Smooth Black of Smooth Black Ink. Also, we are talking about a complete line of products for the guys now. It's at Rugged Evolution. Now, Rugged Evolution Beard Care is the actual name of the company. Rugged Evolution Beard Care makes a complete line. I love their products. Go to www.ruggedevo.com for more details. Again, that's ruggedevo, that's EVO.com for complete details on their products. Also, StimulatingRoots.com. Now, Stimulating Roots is a hair product growth system for women, for everybody, really. And how they spell it, I love this, it's R-U-T-Z. Get amazing hair products that support healthy hair. And I say the secret is in their name, Stimulating Roots. That's really it. That's what actually grows the hair. Now, we're also taking a moment. Go to their site, StimulatingRoots.com. Again, it's spelled R-U-T-Z is how they spell Roots.com. Now, we're also thanking our entire advertising and promotions family for introducing our show fans to their great products and services. And you will find many of them right here in our website store at www.hairadio.com. That's hairradio.com, spelled with just one R. Now, it's also been our honor to welcome our amazing Hair Radio Morning Show fans from coast to coast in the United States and North America to continents all around the world. Our many friends and family, folks over in Ghana, South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, and our folks across the diaspora of Africa, of course. Now, we're also thanking our big fan base in Europe, folks over in Italy, Spain, France, England, and really all over there, to folks back here, right here in America, folks who join me
from all different time zones. I broadcast from right here in Brooklyn, New York. The show is live from 6 in the morning to 9 Eastern. Again, that's Monday through Friday. So we're on.